Well, I mean, it's designed at its heart back in the 70s and 80s, and I want to make sure that we can strengthen our health system going forward. We've got a huge ageing of our population. We've got medical technologies, personalised drugs, cancer medicines, genomics. The list goes on and on and on. And I want to make sure that our system is strengthened, not just for today, but for the next decade or two. We have to prepare now. As Kevin Rudd pointed out in 2007, the system is broken. We need to strengthen and modernise it, and that's very much what I hope that we can do.
Well, what archaic practices do you say are causing the long public hospital waiting lists?
Well, for argument's sake, we have one of the best-trained workforces in the world. We have doctors and nurses who are incredibly capable and well-trained, but when you talk to the doctors and nurses, same doctors working in a private setting are doing twice the rate of work as they might be doing in a public setting. I think, yes, there's an element of training and research to it, but there is also an element of workplace relations to it. There's an element of culture. I know myself, as many people do, the lessons that we learnt when the Commonwealth was running repatriation hospitals and we turned them over to the private sector, and we've now abolished waiting lists. We've now got a much better arrangement for veterans who are being serviced in those hospitals. We've abolished all the archaic practices. So I think it is time for a debate about some of the management practices, the way in which we operate under a system that really belongs in the 50s or 60s. And we have a frank discussion about what is a limited amount of money to spend, that we want to get the maximum outcome for patients out of that system. And I think doctors and nurses, frankly, share the same frustration. And if we can unleash that workforce capacity, I think we will deliver much better health outcomes into the future.
Well, how would you do that?
Well, we have to look at examples, for argument's sake, in the private sector at the moment, where funders aren't paying, in some examples, for what they would refer to as never-ever events. So where there is a bad practice in a public hospital that results in an outcome that's adverse for the patient, then we shouldn't be paying for that. We should be saying that we want practices changed.
So what other things are you talking about when you're saying that the public hospital system should operate more like the private sector?
Well, for argument's sake, the Labor government in Queensland, when it was in at a state level, both Labor and Liberal at a state level in New South Wales, all of them have engaged in practices of outsourcing some of their waiting lists to the private sector. Now, we have to ask, why is that the case? Why is it more efficient for that to take place? And why have we had public services delivered by private providers? It's because there are inherently poor practices in the management of some of our hospitals and other parts of the health system.
So you think the private sector should be more involved in the public hospital system?
Well, what I think we should do for taxpayers is deliver the most efficient system possible. We need to clear waiting lists. We need to see people more quickly in emergency departments. We're not going to do that from Canberra by employing more bureaucrats. When I came into government, I inherited a department that has, in addition to the department, 22 outside agencies. The Labor Party filled up the bureaucratic coffers. We've got to get some of that money back into frontline services. Now, I think that's what doctors and nurses want, and it's what patients deserve.
Now, you want more private health insurers more involved in the primary healthcare system and in the care of chronically ill patients. You're talking about visits to the GP?
Alex, it's a no-brainer. The private health insurers have 11 million Australians covered with private health insurance. And at the moment, the first they know about me is a pre-diabetic going into hospital and needing expensive surgery is when they get the bill. I want private insurers to know more about their patients. I think it's better for the patient. I think it can supplement and complement the services that we provide through GPs at the moment, providing that it's a collaborative arrangement with the GPs. The insurers say that they want to spend money on patients much earlier in the process, so providing support to see a dietitian, making sure that somebody can get in to see a podiatrist. They want to complement the services that we provide under Medicare and with the GP at the moment. And providing the two are working together, I actually think there is a big save down the end. And when people talk about prevention and spending money in preventive medicine, this is a classic example. And the insurers have more skin in the game than anybody, because if they don't provide that input, then as I say, the first they learn about a patient is when the patient turns up at 2 o'clock at an emergency department, travelling generally by ambulance. It's an inappropriate presentation, and it should be better dealt with at a primary care level. And that's why I think, in many ways, I'm surprised that it hasn't taken place before now.
Now, Stephen Leader, a professor in public health, who also chairs the local health board in Western Sydney, says strange things happen, noting that healthcare costs have stopped rising at huge rates in the US. And he also says that huge economies can be achieved using IT, superior quality management, and cracking down on provider greed rather than backing away from universal healthcare. You clearly don't agree. Why?
Well, I look at the health system that we've got at the moment. The Commonwealth is spending $65 billion a year. We raise $10 billion a year through the Medicare levy. But it's not about the money side of it. It's about trying to get better health outcomes. And if we want to provide better health outcomes, we have to make sure that the interaction with the doctor is meaningful, not just a quick presentation where somebody writes a script or refers off to a specialist. I want to make sure that people, 2 out of 3 Australians who are obese or overweight at the moment, have a more meaningful discussion with their GP. And if the GP's books are filled with appointments really that aren't worthy of the GP, or there are higher priority patients that need to get in to see the GP, then we should make those positions and those appointments available. I think that's the first point. The second point that Mr. Leader makes in relation to technology is perfectly valid. We need to have an electronic health record, but we don't need to go down Labor's track where they spent $1.5 billion and they had effectively 30,000 people signed up to a meaningful record. I want to make sure that we can have a record that means something to the patients, that is practical and usable for GPs, and we're working through all of that at the moment, and I think we will deliver something tangible that will result in better health outcomes at a lesser cost. But we need to make sure, Alex, that where we're spending $18 billion today on the MBS, we were spending $8 billion a year 10 years ago. With an ageing population of 2.5 million people over 65 10 years ago and 4.5 million over 65 in 10 years' time, we have to make sure that our system is strengthened and modernised so that we can pay for all of that, we can keep people out of hospitals wherever it's appropriate to do so, people can lead much better lives, healthier lives, and that's what reform today is about, and making sure that our system is strong into the future.
At what level of income do you think it's fair to expect people to pay more when they go to a GP or go to an emergency department?
Well, at the moment it doesn't matter because we've got bulk billing rates, which mean that some people are paying out-of-pocket fees and gap fees, and that's part of the system now. And some people would say, well, how's it going to change? I'm already paying out-of-pocket expenses. But for a lot of people, we turn up to a doctor and expect it to be free. And that's part of the debate we need to have about what should be free, what services can we provide, and frankly, what services should be paid for, at least contributed to, by people who have the capacity to do it.
And do you say that these things should happen now? So as, you know, once these details become clear in the budget, is it going to be that those changes take effect almost immediately?
Well, as I say, Alex, I mean, the government's making decisions now. We're talking to a lot of stakeholders about how we can strengthen our system. I think it's very important that we have the discussion with the Australian public about strengthening Medicare going forward. I think it's very, very important to make sure that we can really provide for the next decade or two. That's what this debate is about. It's about making sure that we can provide a 21st century system that will provide for those that can't provide for themselves. And it means having some tough decisions. And I think people understand, given the spiralling costs of healthcare, given the expectation of our population that we want to be early adopters of new technologies, all of those expenses coming down the line, I think people are smart enough in our country to have the debate, have the discussion, and frankly to resist what has already been a ridiculous scare campaign from the Labor Party.